Get everything for your next project at Menards and save big money. We carry everything to help you breathe easier. Allergen air filters help prevent seasonal allergy symptoms and improve your indoor air quality by capturing microparticles while allowing maximum airflow. Save big on Allergen air filters when you shop at Menards. View the weekly flyer and all of our great deals happening this week on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
I'm John Batchelor with Keish Hagee, the author of the new book, The Optimist, Sam Altman, OpenAI, and the Race to Invent the Future. Our protagonist, our hero, Sam Altman's at Stanford University, and it's a leafy campus in California's weather, and if you know what that is, you'll smile. However, right then, at that moment, it is just beginning with the translation of Stanford from a school known as the West Coast Ivy League into a school associated with Silicon Valley, which is inventing itself all around Stanford. Sand Hill Road, which was famous as a location of the early venture capital funds, is in walking distance from the campus, along with all the fine shops changing all the time. It's a beautiful neighborhood where all the founders of the social media that you now use routinely once walked and talked. And one of the joys of Keach's book for me is that I was there from 2003 every year at the Hoover Institution, not knowing what was going on and those young people talking over there behind the railing for breakfast in the morning. Well, Keach has some of it. And one of it was Sam Altman inventing himself. And by inventing himself, he had an idea with his friends that he met at Stanford. The original idea was something about, this is before the iPhone, there was a clamshell phone, and Sam had an idea that friends want to stay in touch with each other. Kind of like the television show Friends, Keith, that's what it reminded me of.
Yeah, so it's that moment when you were there in the Hoover Institution. What's really important about it is that the dot-com boom and bust had just happened, and everyone from the broader tech industry was sort of picking themselves up. And by the time 2003, 2004, 2005, the despair had passed, and there was hope again. And Sam is a teenager. He's a freshman and a sophomore at Stanford, and he has this idea that pretty soon they're going to be putting location capabilities inside these flip phones, and that's going to mean that we can all track our friends on the phone theoretically, even though that was not even conceivable. And he held a phone up in the air one day at a entrepreneurship meeting at Stanford and said, "This is going to happen. I think we should do something with it. Who's in?" And a couple of folks said that they would be in. They all got together and decided to form a company basically around this. And they were able to pitch this at an entrepreneurship event, attract true interest from one of the most important venture capital funds, NEA, at the time. And they decided to drop out of school basically and do this startup as sophomores in college.
There's a great deal of to-ing and fro-ing now. And this is the part where the movie would take us into the romance of inventing. However, we've got to get to ChatGPT, so we're not going to slow down here much, except to say that Sam is really good at presenting. He gets on a stage, and again and again, I find when he starts to talk, all the grown-ups in the room start to listen. What is the skill, Keach? You've heard it, you've studied it. What is it? His tone? Is it his confidence? What comes across?
One of the things is that Sam comes across as just completely real. So he would, he wouldn't dress up for these meetings. He'd be wearing like shorts or something. He'd walk into a meeting full of, let's say, telecom executives that were twice his age. He would perch on the end of a chair, sometimes with his like knees up around his ears, like he was just like hanging out, at a rap session in the dorm. And then he would talk and convince them all that he could see the future. And by the end of the meeting, they were in. They would sign with this unknown startup the data for their vast telecom network.
So he's got a storytelling skill. He can, yes. Once upon a time. Does it sound like that?
He is a master storyteller.
Yes, that would explain. Now, what we're not, again, we're not talking about a programmer, a coder, or someone who's in a computer all the time playing video games. We're talking about somebody who can translate being 19 or 18 or 20 years old to people who have capital to invest. And in Sand Hill Road and elsewhere are companies that are looking for new programs all the time. This is venture capital, angel fund, first round, all that talk. And it's all being, as Keech says, it's being invented around Sam. Somehow he winds up on an airplane to Sam, to Cambridge, where he meets a man who runs a firm looking for young talent. And that's where Jessica Livingston is, I think, for the first time. And does she remember her first impression of Sam?
Oh, yes. And she's written about this. You know, both she and her husband, Paul Graham, have written about this 25-minute meeting when they first met him, where they were just completely bowled over. He was clearly very special. And Paul Graham has actually said that this must have been what it was like to meet Bill Gates as a teenager, that he was clearly one of the greats.
Yes, that was very helpful when you said that. I remember people joking about Bill Gates. He's got a great pitch, but he doesn't clean his glasses. That was always convincing to me, having worn glasses for most of the first half of my life. You got to remember to clean your glasses or you're not going to impress anybody. But it turns out it was impressive. Now, the original venture, which has to do with cell phones and along comes the iPhone, leads Sam to spend a moment and some time with Steve Jobs. What does he make of Steve Jobs? What does Jobs make of Sam?
Well, in the beginning, Jobs was not impressed with Sam at all. In fact, they had pitched this product, which was called Looped, to Apple at the beginning, and Steve Jobs' response was, it was weak. But then they keep at it because they know that this is the right place for them. And after some back and forth with Apple, they really want to get Loops technology on the new iPhone in what was basically going to become the store, you know, for all the apps, the App Store. And after a pitch came back, there was a pause and Steve Jobs said, cool. And that was it, right? Like once Steve Jobs says that what you're doing is cool, that's all that Sam ever wanted. He had idolized Steve Jobs his whole life, been obsessed with Apple, Apple stock, Apple products. And this was him really making it. And he actually got on stage at the App Store launch and was able to use Loops technology to kind of show off the location capabilities of the iPhone that year.
All right. Your name is Rockefeller and you're in Pennsylvania and they've struck oil. Or your name is Stanford. Leland Stanford, and you hear there's a gold strike up north. That's the moment we're at right now. And so a great deal of this success is that an enormous momentum is coming all around Sam. Does he feel it? Does he remember feeling it, Keech?
Well, there was that moment when he was on stage at that Apple event in a very famous like pink and green double pop collar where he became sort of famous for the first time. So, yes, I mean, it's unforgettable. The moment turned out to be very brief because that was in 2008 and then the financial crisis came and just kind of kneecapped everybody. But that was sort of the last moment of like real promise for Looped.
Now, what I liked about this moment also is that Looped did not go big time. And by big time, I mean Airbnb or Stripe big time. However, Sam made $5 million. And that sounds like a lot of money to people who do not have $5 million. But there was something about the water at Palo Alto that said $5 million was a disappointment. Do I read that correctly, Keith?
Oh, absolutely. Loop was a failure. I mean, they raised roughly $45 million and kind of ended up having to sell it for those parts. The investors did not make money. And yeah, Sam made a little money, but it was a failure for sure.
And Sam is reviewing his life now, and he spends time going around the world. With that $5 million, he can buy a ticket anywhere. What did he learn on his time, which he calls backpacking?
Yeah, he spent some time thinking about what he wanted to do. And I think initially he wanted to start another company. That's what he thought he was going to do. And one of the things that I think he learned over that whole process, because he'd been kind of investing on the side here and there, helping out Sequoia, one of his investors, as a scout, that he realized sort of grudgingly that actually what he was really good at was investing. That was his superpower. And so that's what he came back and did for a while with the help of Peter Thiel as he became an investor.
Yes, we're all now meeting the same players. If you're Shakespeare, you love this game because everybody doubles up in skills. You know, sometimes they're the dad of the bride. Sometimes they're the brother of the bride. They come back and forth. There's Musk. There's Thiel. The same players are always coming up looking for opportunities. And Sam is now attached to a firm called YC. Are they called YC Combinator at this moment, or is that later on?
They're called Y Combinator, but everyone in Silicon Valley just calls them YC. So yes, by a couple years after that, so this is 2014, and he sold Looped in 2012, and by 2014, he was named the president, the successor of Paul Graham at Y Combinator, which kind of made him like the king of Silicon Valley.
Right. He's in his 20s, and he's in charge of hearing people in their teens and 20s and 30s present ideas to him. And he has a skill set that can present an idea, but he also has an ear for ideas that come to him and are successful. The three big winners at this moment are Airbnb, Stripe, and Dropbox. Is that the three?
Yeah.
And you only have to win with one of those to be really big. What does Peter Thiel make of Sam? This is before the OpenChatGPT moment. What does he make of him in those years?
Peter Thiel was also quite taken by Sam. Although it's funny because they are so different temperamentally. Peter Thiel describes himself as a contrarian, but Sam is an optimist. And Peter Thiel is not naturally an optimist at all, right? He's very, very skeptical, but he sees Sam's ability to see into the future and he just kind of holds on for the ride. You know, Sam says, we're in a big boom right now. These are the things we should invest in. We should just invest in like the best Y Combinator company every year. And even though Peter Thiel sees everyone else kind of wanting to do that too, he sort of swallows hard and is like, okay, let's do it. And he made a lot of money that way.
And Elon Musk, whom we now have probably a completely different picture than in those days. Elon Musk was part of the PayPal success. Musk goes on to found a number of companies. I'm told that he's a very difficult person to have a conversation with. Do they have a relationship in any fashion? Do they make opinions of themselves, Sam and Elon Musk?
So they had met one time earlier on. Someone from Y Combinator had set up a meeting for Sam to go tour the SpaceX factory, which is, you know, in Southern California, Elon Musk's factory. And for Sam, this was a life-defining event. He looked at the rockets hanging from the ceiling, looked at the look on Elon's face when he described going to Mars, and thought, okay, this is a benchmark for what conviction looks like. I want to be like this guy. And you can see that he started to take some of the lessons for how Elon talked about things, right? This is not a company. This is a mission. This is a religion. We are doing something much, much bigger than making stuff to sell to people. And he would apply that lesson to his own work.
Yes, let's mention that Sam has, he writes well, and he writes about the future. Two things. What is Georgism, and what is effective altruism out of Georgism?
So Georgism came from the ideas of Henry George, who was a journalist and ultimately like an activist in the late 19th century. And he had many ideas, but one of them was that we shouldn't be taxing people's labor. We should tax land because that's really what's fair. It's not fair to tax people's labor. And the most progressive thing we could do is to have only tax be land tax. And this is a pretty fringe idea. It's had some acolytes over the years, but Sam was really interested in these kind of big ideas, and he wrote a whole essay about the future with AI. Once AI is taken over and we're going to have to figure out how to share things properly, Georgism is one of the ways we should do it. We should do kind of a universal basic income, maybe just tax the sort of equity of the mass AI company. And these are just very, very out there, but thoughtful ways to organize society that he was talking about when he was head of Y Combinator.
Too quickly about his father. Does this idea come to him before or after Jerry dies?
So Jerry died in 2018. I'm trying to think about the exact timing of that essay. Like roughly around, it's a great question whether it was sparked by that, because I totally see the Jerry ideas in there. You know, it was roughly the same time. I do think the essay was a bit after.
It's nice that it's not as edible as it could be, say, with Elon Musk and his dad. You're always invited to put too much edible in any combination of father and son. But in this instance, he honors his father, even though his father was disappointed in his dream. All right, we're back to the moment we have to return to OpenChatGPT and what Keech in her new book calls wonderfully in a chapter called The Blip. The book is The Optimist, Sam Altman, OpenAI, and the Race to Invent the Future. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.